Welcome to Men in Charge. I'm Tony Flynn.
And I'm Kevin Decker. And, Tony, I'm going to use my red card ability here to make a complaint. You started the banter for the last episode, too, and we're supposed to switch off every time.
If that's true, and I'm not going to buy into that right away, then I think our listeners would let us know, right?
Well,
because they wouldn't tolerate.
No, look at this. These phones are ringing off the hook. You just can't tell because the ringer's turned off.
And there are no phones there. You're pointing to the air, Kevin.
It's true, but the listener didn't know that, so thanks a lot. So that's my second complaint, is that when I point to things in the studio that don't exist, you're supposed to just play along with it, especially if I'm criticizing you.
Oddly, I'm reluctant to do so. But, Kevin, what you could do to compensate for these bogus red cards is to announce the episode's title.
Oh, yeah.
And explain what the heck it's about.
Yeah, well, we're back here right in the middle of Season 7, Episode 14, and today's episode is Eau de Hose.
That's right.
Which is, I believe, a lyric in many rap songs.
It would be, but it's not.
Oh, okay.
Oh, as you can hear from my pronunciation, and Kevin's, he's as good a pronouncer of that word. Oh is the French word, E-A-U-X.
And what does that mean in
waters.
French or whatever? Waters of the hose. That makes sense.
It's waters taken from the hose.
Right.
Do you remember when, I had this construction job years ago, and there was no water, and I got thirsty. But there was water from a hose that was rinsing away some of the sawdust and concrete, and I drank from it, and no one took me seriously again.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they brought water. I just went to the hose.
Yeah.
Like the neighborhood dog.
Isn't non-potable a funny word? Because, of course, you can drink it. It just probably kills you.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it's potable. It's drinkable.
Yeah, you can pote it and suffer the consequences.
I remember that I used to water the dog growing up with the household hose, and then my mother would screech when she came outside and saw me drinking from it and say, don't. And I said, is it bad? And she said, no, it just smells weird.
It's true.
So she protected me from that. That's
great. But you get all sorts of vinyl byproducts and things like that that aren't as good for brain development, which accounts for certain of our scripts, I think.
Yeah.
The ones
I wrote.
Period.
Yeah.
Mine too.
Yeah.
I went through my bad hose period.
Oh, well, that's good to know. I will tell you this. We can't credit my bad writing for me having drank from lead hoses. I mean, that would be really bad, right?
Because the lead and hoses,
get all that lead.
I couldn't lift those.
Yeah, actually, I think they call those pipes. Yeah.
That's right. But
that
sometimes when there was a pipe dripping and I had another period of confinement in the basement because of a crossword, perhaps, and my parents sent me down there, I would extend my tongue to catch the drip.
Really? That's amazing.
It was amazing because it was dark, and yet I could always find the drip.
That's interesting. It actually reminds me a lot about how the man in Richard Matheson's novel, The Incredible Shrinking Man, watered himself.
I don't remember. How did he water himself?
By drinking out of a pipe when there was just a drip. But he was so small that it was an enormous amount of water.
It was a deluge. He would be soaked.
Yeah, he had a lot of water weight in that story. Great story, by the way, listener. Go
it
read
is.
It if
it,
you read. If anybody reads anymore.
It ends unhappily, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It's The Incredible Shrinking Man, and of course it's a metaphor for the diminishment of the stereotypical machismo of men in the 20th century.
Oh, I forgot. That is what it's about. But he dissolves into...
He does.
At the atomic level.
He just goes like Ant-Man into the quantum realm.
Yeah, I don't know if the character in The Incredible Shrinking Man maintains some kind of structural integrity, does he?
I don't think he does.
No, I don't think so.
We certainly don't continue to read any of his adventures after the end of the story.
No, it's the end.
Yeah, it's pretty much the end.
The print is too fine, I think, at that point.
It is.
Yeah. I think, you agree, we should probably say something about the day's segments.
Yeah, people often tune into the show expecting sketches. And I know once or twice we've just bantered all the way through because we had enough riffing going on.
Coming up first, we visit Jared Kushner's man cave, the basement of his father's house. He is interviewed by the famous German documentary filmmaker Greta von Falkenstein Gomez.
Yes.
And we learn a lot about his, apparently he's been abandoned by his Russian friends.
Yeah, that's right. He has actually a difficult time answering the questions about whether he has Russian friends or not.
Yeah, and he's basically is bewildered. And you can listen and enjoy his bewilderment. What's next, Kevin?
After that, we do have a commercial from a new sponsor. Most of our listeners, like us, Tony, are probably college teachers, and our students have one question, which is, when have I studied enough to pass the test with a C minus? Well, Academic Pop-Up Timers has the answer for that question.
Yeah, there's a little you'll have to
listen
to.
You'll have to listen.
It's a way to pay in order to work
a lot less.
Right.
Minimum work. That's
minimum
right.
work for maximum noise.
And then after that, we have a return of a fan favorite. Several years ago, through spam email, one of my fake former students, Richard Stans, contacted me here at the show. And so we did what only makes sense, which is to give him his own segment, The Republic for Richard Stans. And in each one of these, Richard comes up with a new crazy idea for how to reform politics in America.
And they're not entirely credible.
And they're not at all credible, as a matter of fact. In this one, Richard Stans takes the idea of certain issues being political footballs and makes that literal.
And we want you, listener, to detect the difference between a political football and a political volleyball.
Definitely. And finally, then, we will hear from Castigation Games, the makers of Arkham Insanity and Miskatonic Manor, the senior citizens' game of not ancient but elderly alien gods. And this time around, they have a new game offering, which is so complicated, I don't even remember the title.
The name itself is like 11 pages
it
long.
It is, yeah. It's like translating a Heideggerian term of art from philosophy. But you'll have to wait till the end of the episode for it, ladies and gentlemen. So get the dictionaries out, dust them off, and get ready for that new game.
We want to hear pages flipping all the way here at the station.
I am Grete Wolkenstein-Gomez, celebrated German documentary filmmaker and cultural provocateurin. I am here with the American president's son-in-law and squeak toy, Jared Kushner. Today we are going to explore his basement man cave, which is filled with childhood memorabilia and, I think, mold.
You're German, right, Greta? I can tell.
Well, Jared, actually, so can I. I did precisely that when I introduced myself as a German documentary filmmaker.
See how quickly we came to agreement there, Greta? I'm quite the negotiator, aren't I? Just like my father-in-law, who's the president of the United States, by the way.
Yes. It intrigues me that you align your achievements with your father-in-law rather than with your own father. Is it because your own father, Charles Kushner, is a convicted felon?
Well, maybe. I'm not sure I understand the question, Greta.
Your father's criminal convictions for illegal campaign contributions, tax evasion, and witness tampering, and paying a prostitute to seduce your Uncle William, can make for a lively discussion later in my interview. They point to the larger question of why both your father figures, your mentors, are criminals.
Whoa there. The president hasn't been convicted yet, so only one of my mentors so far is officially a criminal. Let's be fair.
I prefer to be patient. Now, tell me about this place of yours, this man cave.
It's actually the basement of my father's house. I call this my man cave because that makes it sound less like a basement. Also, it really is pretty much a cave. Can you hear the bats?
Now I can, yes.
Whenever Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was between indictments, Dad would invite him over from Israel to stay with us. He took over my bedroom, and Dad made me sleep down here.
Metaphorically, of course, isn't Netanyahu still taking over your bedroom in the Middle East?
I'm not sure what you mean. So, yes?
Oh, yes. But now, tell me about these trophies and tchotchkes on your shelves. You must have been quite the athlete when you were young. I've never seen so many bowling trophies.
Actually, my dad bought me those. He said that because the trophies were evidence of winning, it was easier just to buy them instead of going to all the trouble of, you know, effort.
So much easier, yeah.
Also, he said that imagining I had won used the same part of the brain as remembering I had won. So there wasn't any real difference between the two. So that's why I'm really proud of these bowling trophies.
And what are these tchotchkes? They look like Russian dolls. Are these from your Russian friends?
I don't know what you mean, Greta. I don't have any Russian friends.
No, Jared, not anymore. Do you miss them?
Yes? No? I don't know what you mean.
What is in these Russian nesting dolls?
Just Russian dolls. But my Russian so-called friends told me that mighty treasures were hidden in them. Well, I haven't found any treasures yet.
What kind of treasures?
You know, treasures. Like a licensing agreement for a hotel in Moscow with Ivanka's dad's name on it. And some video of him in a Moscow hotel with women who weren't Ivana, or Marla, or Melania, or Ivanka. Oh, and magic beans.
But Jared, how could any of those fit into Russian dolls? Weren't you suspicious?
I'm not sure what you mean. Maybe I just haven't found them yet. I look every day. Maybe they're in the little tiny hard doll in the center, which I haven't been able to open.
Perhaps you're simply not trying hard enough, Jared. But I must ask, magic beans?
No, I haven't found those either.
But magic beans?
My Russian friends promised me there were magic beans in one of them. I have to keep looking because if I stop believing in them, I'll feel like such a fool for being tricked. But those darn tiny inside dolls just won't open.
I have an idea. Doesn't your Saudi friend, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, have a bone saw? That ought to work.
Hey, that's right. Thanks, Greta. I'll go text him right now.
I'm afraid, listener, that we must end this portion of the interview until next time, when I will prompt Jared Kushner to say...
Nothing yet, Greta. Maybe if I cut finer slices. Ow!
Greetings, listener. I'm Education Secretary / Student Debt Profiteer Betsy DeVos. Today we have Guy Bling and Mitzi Maven from Lower Heights Community College to tell us all about their bookstore's exciting new product, Academic Pop-Up Timers.
You bet we're pretty darned thrilled, Betsy. All you students, professors, and administrators out there face many of the same questions. How do you know when you've read enough? How do you skate by with a C on that final exam? Well, with our new Academic Pop-Up Timer cranial implant, you'll have the early warning sign to stop reading before you're in danger of doing any in-depth research.
Thanks, Guy. It's a simple idea that's really found a home here in our bookstore. We all know how those little pop-up timers work to tell us when a turkey is done. Well, Vichy America Laboratories has reconfigured those same timers to detect degrees of knowledge.
That's right, Mitzi. Our technicians drill a small, mostly painless hole at different points in the skull, insert a pop-up timer, and that's all there is to it. Our semi-science-based technology does the rest. You will no longer be in any danger of overreading, overthinking, or over-preparing.
But don't take our word for it. Just listen to what our happy customers from Lower Heights Community College have to say. Dr. Erasmus Beazle from the English/Student Affirmation Department writes, "I used to think that I needed to inspire my students with a love of in-depth knowledge, but with the new pop-up timer, I feel great about showing videos all semester long."
Isn't that a terrific time saver, Mitzi? Next, we hear from Patsy Puffer, a fifth-year freshman, who texted us saying, "Wow, I've gotten really good at padding my essays while reducing content. Thanks, pop-up timer."
That's right, Guy. We also heard from Provost Stanley Fadewell.
"I used to agonize over administrative choices that could affect the entire college community. But now, with my academic pop-up timer, a simple roll of the dice takes care of all my decision-making."
Thanks, Guy and Mitzi. Remember, listener, look for academic pop-up timers when you want just enough knowledge to squeak by.
You're listening with undue excitability to Men in Charge.
And now it's the new political reality show, The Republic for Richard Stans. Here's your host, armchair slacktivist Richard Stans.
Hey, everybody. A big shout out. My name's Richard Stans, and welcome to my show. I'm the only character on Men in Charge who sends spam to the show claiming to be one of Kevin's former students.
He was never my student.
And I owe my fame to Men in Charge's understandable decision to let me discuss my great political ideas on their show. Just between you and me, listener, I've been carrying these guys for the last season, but my Social Security checks keep coming, or rather, I should say, my neighbor's Social Security checks, which I found while house-sitting for the old lady.
Richard, maybe you'd like to share the new great political idea you came up with. You've already suggested ideological timeshares, anarchist hockey, and votes for avatars. What do you have for us this time?
Well, announcer, what do the following things have in common? Abortion, immigration, pork barrel projects, the national debt.
They're all...
Besides the fact that all of those things are giving me heartburn from watching the local access cable news farm reports about them...
They all represent contentious and long-lasting political debates that, due to their apparent insolubility in terms of agreed-upon social facts, point out structural irrationality in the fabric of post-industrial states. That?
What I hear you saying is they're all political volleyballs. That's what you meant to say, right?
Political footballs.
Footballs? Whatever.
Richard, I'm just going to have to leave the rest of the analysis to you. I'll come back in at the end.
Yeah, okay. See you later. Maybe the announcer can't handle the truth, but why not turn these political footballs into, well, real footballs? So I, Richard Stans, partnering with Airmo CO Pigskin Industries, offer all the talking heads of the different political administrations in the U.S. a game of political football. And here to stand in as someone that I can explain this in front of is my old college pal, Brian Dimwood.
It's pronounced Arnie, Richard. Arnie Dimwood. And yes, we haven't seen each other since college.
Thanks for coming, Arnie, and guest starring on my show. Hey, think quick!
Oh, boy. I thought you were going to throw that football at me.
I still am. Think quick!
Ah! You hit me in the face with the ball.
Pick it up.
Fine, but I also need to check to see if I'm bleeding. Christ. Here's your ball. Hey, this ball is covered on both sides in digital screens, just like...
The Goodyear blimp!
That's exactly what I was gonna say. The Goodyear blimp. And the words flashing on both sides. The Middle East.
Yes, now let me set this up. You ever play catch the pigskin with your dad out back after a pot roast dinner?
No. My father was convicted of grand larceny before I was born. I never met him.
Well, that's great, because that proves my point exactly. A real political football would be the one that would solve the problem of the so-called apparently insoluble issues like abortion and the legal status of fornication with dolphins. And you're holding it now.
Yeah, and I can't seem to get rid of it either. It's like stuck to my hand.
It's a technically non-toxic epoxy resin of my own devising. Did it in my garage, no less. It will let you go, but you will have to provide a good reason to accept your side in the Middle East debate. We toss it until somebody is reduced to ideology, ad hominems, or non sequitur when they catch it. Then that's how we solve the political problem.
You can't just solve a problem like the conflict in the Middle East through a game.
But it's a political game. I call it real political football, or real political soccer if you're south of the border.
The idea of a political game is crazy. I mean, people's lives are at stake here.
But what about the game Battleship?
What?
That's a political game, right? And you look at how many people are serving on those cruisers and destroyers and Battleship. I'm just talking about throwing around a little football.
How can I get this football unstuck from my hand?
I'm not sure I programmed the pigskin for that, actually.
Maybe it's just as well that I've been handed a note from the producer asking me to say, that's all the time we have today for The Republic for Richard Stands.
I'm shaking this as hard as I can and it's not coming off. Although I think I just activated my latent carpal tunnel syndrome. Thanks, Richard. I'm a typist by trade.
Nerd!
New from Castigation Games, the company that brought you role-playing games about ancient alien gods like Arkham Insanity and Kennebunkport Menace, and the game about elderly alien gods that turned out to be a surprisingly important cultural touchpoint of 2018, Miskatonic Manor. It's the only board game recommended by Elon Muscat, private space explorer and expensive Portuguese liqueur enthusiast.
Hello, and yes, I am Elon Muscat, the author of the infamous and outrageous stunt of smoking tobacco while being interviewed by Roger Basement on air. You know, idols of mine like Richard Feynman, Alan Turing, John Nash, and Bjorn Ulvaeus of ABBA have often complained about one thing, namely that there are no party games invented that they haven't figured out a way to win after just looking at the party invitation weeks earlier. And that's where my new recommended game, Navigating Recursive Nested Rule Sets, comes in.
Thanks, Mr. Muscat, but you made it sound like it was your game, rather than a new offering from the unshaven and forgotten game designers at Castigation Games.
By my, I meant the royal we.
Whatever. Listener, if your penchant for finishing crossword puzzles in 5 minutes or less is getting boring, we encourage you to try Navigating Recursive Nested Rule Sets.
Hi, this is Alan Turing. Admire me or pity me, I want to stake the claim that Castigation Games has come up with a remarkable new distraction. In addition to its absorbing storyline, it has a virtual game board. And by the way, you can both admire and pity me.
I'm the Game Master. Okay, first you players need to choose which character you'll play. Either F.A. Grandly, an economist, UHF Hoyt Seaton, a logician, or Paula Smith, a lady logician.
Hoffmeister, you choose first.
Thanks, Petey. Which character is the one holding a shotgun and guzzling a flask of whiskey?
That's the economist. Tools of the trade.
I'll be the lady logician, whatever that is. Her character figure looks like my mom, but deadlier.
Not so fast. In choosing these characters, you forgot the first rule of Navigating Recursive Nested Rule Sets, the game of pure intellect in which you contemplate the universal quantum structure, fluctuating as it does attosecond by attosecond in every detail down to mini-microscopic Planck lengths.
Egads! What'd we do wrong, Game Master?
Yeah, what Beatty said.
None of your powers in the game can be activated while you still possess a corporeal body. Navigating Recursive Nested Rule Sets is a game of pure reason.
Throw your character figure away, Beatty. We gotta figure this out with only our gray matter.
Use your brains, Hoffmeister. I don't care if you hurt yourself.
Use your minds!
While other games only promise you the most fulfilling intellectual experience of your life every time you play, only Navigating Recursive Nested Rule Sets can deliver. Choose your favorite setting. The ancient Egypt of the pharaohs. The Roman Empire. The roaring 20s in Chicago. Or a scientifically advanced arcology of the 39th century. Then utterly discard your chosen setting as you move into an immutable and chillingly crystalline structure of unadulterated form, without content, that makes the Wachowski sisters, the Matrix, look like an angry toddler toothily savaging an abacus.
Hi, I'm mathematician John Nash. You probably know me from Russell Crowe's posthumous portrayal of me in the film A Beautiful Mind.
Hey, it sounded like he said that Russell Crowe was in A Beautiful Mind after his own death. And I don't think that was John Nash at all.
No, it didn't sound like that at all. And he was.
In any case, I, John Nash, was made non compos mentis by my obsession with the fundamental mathematical structure of the universe. But if I had a choice in the way I would have been driven insane, I would have chosen the game, Navigating Recursive Rule Sets.
So, don't rush out to your closest overpriced strategy game store. Instead, find the still point in your own mind and get a copy of Navigating Recursive Rule Sets today. It's from game designers Mutton Chops Johansson and Grizzled Juan Embry, who brought you award-winning board games like Too Many Graduate Faculty for Accreditation and Subprime Mortgage Meltdown 2018. Castigation Games, proving over and over again why premium board game companies shouldn't advertise on the radio.
Kevin, one of the enduring legacies of that last segment, Castigation Games, I think, is the story of John Nash.
Right.
And we, of course, had different versions of the John Nash. And I think it's worth you telling us more about it.
Well, John Nash, as everybody knows, was really the actor Russell Crowe in disguise.
So there really was no John Nash.
Yeah, there was no John Nash.
Yeah.
And the problem was people kept reading this book called A Beautiful Mind and saying, but is John Nash real? Well, Russell Crowe read the book, liked it, and decided to step in to the role so that people could rest their minds that there really is a John Nash. And that's what we call a Nash equilibrium. So
distribution, because he played a fictional character with a real actor.
Exactly. Yeah, that's right. So it just goes to show that when you go to the cinema, you're actually participating in a greater degree of reality than your everyday life. I've always held that.
Yeah. Things aren't real until you see them on film.
Right. We would have liked to have spent more time during this after banter talking about the game that was advertised, but apparently it's carried out in the realms of pure rational thought. And
which we're a little short on today.
Yeah. And if unless we want to just kind of get into discussing pure mathematics, there's little to be said.
The original concepts go with it.
Exactly. And so as Jacques Derrida said, and probably Hans and Jacques as well, any attempt to take a continuous quantity and divide it is violence, symbolic violence.
Even the crafting of such a sentence is, because it's declarative, it's definitive, and yet uncertain.
Well, speaking of doing violence, do we have time to thank our cast?
I think we do at last have time to thank our cast. And there are a lot of them. First, this episode was written by Kevin Decker, Tony Flynn, and Ann Porter. But we have a glorious list of thoroughly unpaid actors. In fact, shouldn't they start paying us?
They should for rent, yeah.
At least for rent. Nancy Roth, Scott Kinder-Pyle, Tony Flynn, Kevin Decker, Jody Stewart-Strobelt, Nicholas Strobelt, Ann Porter, Terry McMullen, Liz Rognes, and Liam McMullen.
And we'd like to thank the three people who, when they are thought about as mud pies, become one: Vern Windham, Carrie Boyce, Nisha Schramm, and the only man who shops at convenience stores for vegetables, Brian Lindsay.